Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, December 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what is the second to last edition of Bang the Book Radio for 2019. Professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com will join me. We'll chat as many of the bowl games as we can get to here on today's show. And we'll also take a look at college basketball during our Handicapping the Hardwood segment, where conference play begins for a lot of conferences here this week and the other conferences that have already started it. Well, they're going to get back into conference play. So we'll talk about how your handicap is a little bit different there, a key injury, and some fade and follow stuff as we head on throughout this week. Over at bangthebook.com, we're covering all of that. Final Super Contest and Circa Million articles going up here today. I'll have previews up for all four NFL playoff games for this weekend. Opening line report already up in the NFL. And obviously, we've got Parker Michaels still doing his thing on a daily basis in the NHL, covering NBA and college basketball. I'm going to start working on my MLB season win total guide here over the next few days. So very, very busy time of year. It always is over at bangthebook.com. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest, two segments, two sports betting markets here on today's show. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going all right, man. I have to say, it kind of struck me that you said you're about to start working on your MLB season win total guide.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Already.
I think PointsBet came out with MLB win totals in New Jersey. Then William Hill came out with them already, I believe out in Las Vegas. But you know, obviously still a lot of moving parts on the baseball side. But just try to get a jump start with that because you know I want to try to have that done early on in spring training. Major League Baseball season starts March 26th, I think. So a very early start to the season and you know plenty of stuff to get to in that guide. But plenty of stuff to get to here on today's show as well. And, you know, with the holiday last week, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday, had a very hard time getting a lot of college football insights for these bowl games. So we'll recap everything we've seen so far in the bowl season on next week's show when we've got fewer games to talk about. But we'll dive right in here and take a look at really the two marquee teams on the Monday night card in the Orange Bowl, Virginia and Florida. Florida 14.5-point favorite here in this one. So another big spread for Virginia in one of their postseason games, total up to 55 in this one.
Yeah, I agree with the total move here. I think the over is probably the right side. I didn't end up playing this one. This was a strong lean for me. So I do like Florida some in this one too. I don't like that 67% of the bets are on Florida. You know, fading the public has certainly done very well in bowl games. At least in past seasons. I don't know exactly how it's done so far this year, but 67% of the bets on Florida, 77% of the money on Florida. I think that makes a lot of sense, too. First of all, you've got the ACC against the SEC, and we know the difference in class there. But to me, Virginia has been an interesting team in that they're really not as good as I thought they would be this year. And yet they still won quite a few games. And it says more about the ACC than anything else. I will say that Virginia's defense, and this is something that some people are overlooking, has not even been close to the same without Bryce Hall. Probably their best defensive player, definitely their best guy in the secondary. And that definitely has hurt them a lot. This Virginia defense that was once thought to be a really good unit has been really poor the last few games. I think Florida will probably score quite a few points in this game. As long as Florida is motivated for this game, and I would assume they would be, I think they're a pretty well-coached team. I like Mendenhall as well, so I don't say that there's a big coaching edge. I think there is a big talent edge. I think Florida, as long as they're motivated here, probably wins this one fairly easily, but it's pretty hard to take minus 14.5.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think you got to give Dan Mullen a lot of credit because, you know, it goes with Felipe Franks early. He gets hurt. Kyle Trask wound up playing really, really well for Florida over the course of the season. I think Mullen, with extra time to get ready, with extra time to groom that quarterback room a little bit more, you've got to think Florida puts up some points here in this one. And the thing that's so worrisome for me about Virginia is they are so dependent on Bryce Perkins. And Bryce Perkins faces a very fast, very skilled, very, very good top 15 Florida defense here. I don't know if he'll have much running room with the legs. I don't know if he'll have much time to throw. I don't know if his wide receivers will get any separation for him. Maybe the best course of action here, and I know that you mentioned you do like the over a little bit, maybe Virginia team total under, something like that. I do think that Florida, you know, should control this game, should win this game comfortably, but not a real great slate of bowl games here on Monday, December 30th. So we transition over to New Year's Eve here, and we're going to try and go through these in kind of rapid-fire fashion a little bit. Want to make sure we've got some time for college basketball and to try and hit as many of these bowl games as we can here with, you know, some of the limited shows and limited segments because of the holidays. The Sun Bowl, 255, 256, Florida State, Arizona State. Arizona State, 4.5 market-wide, total down from 56 to 54. The three best offensive players in this game, Cam Akers, Brandon Ayuk, and then also Eno Benjamin, all sitting this one out with an eye towards the NFL. Pretty big reason why the totals come down.
Yeah, this one's a really tough game for me. I know you have a stronger opinion in this one than I do. I will say that if I were looking at the list of games that we're going to talk about today, the one that I would want to bet the least is probably this one. So I don't really have any strong opinion here. I know that 70% of the bets here have been on Arizona State, which obviously tells you that there's been some sharp money on Florida State, seeing that the line has gone where it was. And that's clearly largely because of the players who are sitting out here. I do think that Arizona State, there are some questions as to whether they care about this game. You know, does Edwards really care too much about this game? Florida State, I don't trust them very much, so I'm not really anxious to go back them. I think the total coming down makes a lot of sense too. 68% of the bets on the under, 93% of the money. So everybody likes the under here. I probably don't disagree with the lean to the under here, but I really don't have anything strong.
Well, I mean, once again, it makes sense to fade the Pac-12 in bowl games. So that is an angle that has worked out pretty well. And I am fading the Pac-12 here in this one. I'm on Florida State plus the 4.5. Arizona State losing both of their coordinators here. They fired one. The other one took the head coaching job at New Mexico. And I think Gonzalez is a very good hire for the Lobos. Obviously, they're going to look significantly different next year. I wonder, like you said, you know, does Arizona State get all that invested in this football game? It's a big game for a guy like Daniels, you know, getting the extra bowl practices and all that, but losing a couple of very key weapons. Herm Edwards kind of saying, you know, going into this one, I'm more worried about getting my staff together. You know, I'm more worried about getting our recruiting class in place. Seems like they may not be fully invested in this one. Florida State with Odell Haggins, he is staying on Mike Norvell's staff. So maybe that kind of takes away a little bit of the excitement that I have about this game because, you know, Haggins is a guy, a position coach, I believe he's the defensive line coach, somebody that the players rallied around a couple years ago in the Independence Bowl, somebody that I expected the players to rally around again this time. The fact that they're keeping him maybe takes away some of that edge, but still 4.5 is a very big number for an Arizona State team taking on a talented, underachieving Florida State team without its two best skill position guys. So I'll take a little bit of line value here because I think 4.5 is a little bit too high. If you want to look for live betting opportunities in this game, it's in El Paso. So it's played in elevation. These two teams haven't played in a long time. Maybe a little bit of fatigue from the defenses in the second half. So maybe you kind of look to take the full game under, first half under, maybe middle of the second half, something like that. But I do like Florida State here a little bit in the Sun Bowl. I know you've got a little bit of a stronger opinion on this one. Game 257, 258, the Liberty Bowl between Kansas State and Navy. Navy 2.5-point favorite, total right now sitting anywhere from 52 to 53.5.
Yeah, you know, I will say ahead of time, I haven't bet any of these games yet. Now, that was kind of on purpose. I wanted to wait till closer to the game. So it's kind of nice for me to be able to just talk through these games because, you know, these are games that I'm considering right now because I didn't want to go ahead and fire because I know there's so many guys who end up sitting out, getting in trouble. I also want to see what the public bets. So, you know, we're able to do that here as we get closer. I will say that, you know, the first thing I like when I look at this game is the under. Kansas State and Navy, the tempo they play at, Kansas State is 127th out of 130 teams, and Navy is 117th. So you're going to get a lot of running. You're going to get a lot of clock moving. Kansas State, 64% of their offensive plays have been run so far this year. Navy, 88% of their plays have been run. So The question you have to ask yourself is, do we think that each team can stop the run? Now, there is some question about Kansas State. Kansas State has given up 4.91 yards per carry so far this year. So that concerns me some. I would say that they've had a lot of time to get ready for this option, and Klieman had to see that option a lot. I would think that they would be at least well prepared to try to stop the option. The Navy's defense has stopped the run really well this year, 3.27 yards per carry allowed. I have to lean to the under when you get a total as high as this, with two teams who run the ball as much as they do and play this slowly. So that would be my strongest lean in this game. When you look at the side, Navy's getting 51% of the bets, so we're almost exactly 50-50 split. The money just slightly more on Navy. So we've had a little bit of a sharp move here toward Navy, and I believe that line move happened pretty early on. I don't think that this is a game that I'm real interested in taking a side, but if this game gets to 3 on Navy, I would start leaning toward Kansas State. I think that the AAC really hasn't played very well in the bowl game so far. They've had some pretty poor performances. So maybe that league wasn't quite as good as I thought and what other people thought as well. Kansas State would be my slight lean here. I like the under better, though.
Yeah, I agree with you on the under here. And something else, too, for Kansas State, I think it's different, because you say they gave up 4.91 yards per carry. And, obviously that's not good at all. And that's one of the reasons why this line probably did swing a little bit in Navy's way. Also, what Navy did to Army in the rivalry game was very, very impressive. A dominant performance there from them. But the thing about Kansas State here, and look, they gave up 4.97 yards per play in conference action, or yards per carry in conference action. The Big 12 spreads you out. And a big part of that, I think, for Kansas State is that they're just not fast and athletic on defense. So if you get spread out in the running game and you've got to cover sideline to sideline, it's easier to run on a defense like Kansas State, who, by the way, only faced 372 rushing attempts during the regular season. That was the fourth fewest in college football because, as you mentioned, they play at such a slow tempo. They stay on the field. I think when you take on an option team and everything's kind of bunched up a lot more, it sort of hides some of that lack of talent, some of that lack of speed that Kansas State has defensively. At that point, it's all about scheme. It's about gap responsibility. It's about not giving up those really big plays. I think it's easier with that spread rushing attack in a one-on-one format to gain big chunks of yards against Kansas State. I think it's a lot more difficult when everything is bunched up like it is with the triple option. So I wouldn't be the least bit shocked if Kansas State actually defends the option relatively well here in this game. And if they're able to do that, I think they can move the football with their methodical pace down the field. So I actually like Kansas State a little bit here. My line's a pick 'em in this game. I may end up just taking the Kansas State money line with a little bit of interest here in the two games on Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. This line may hit 3. I think that Navy, playing so well in that game that everybody just saw, I think the public side is liable to be Navy here. So wait this one out. I think we might see a 3.
Yeah, I think so too. And obviously a +3, I would just go ahead and take that instead of the money line. So I'm just kind of waiting on this one, just seeing sort of where it goes. But like I said, I'm going to have a little bit of a power ratings overlay on this one. And that's even with giving Navy a point for, quote unquote, home field advantage, just because they played in Memphis before, they have a lay of the land. They're a little bit more experienced with that setting. That may not even matter here, but I do have Kansas State -1 in a pure neutral handicap. So, in that respect, maybe the wrong team favored here in this matchup. We haven't talked much about the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl, probably because it's not a very attractive matchup between Georgia State and Wyoming. Wyoming, a touchdown favorite, total of 48 in this one. What do you think, Kyle?
This is a game where I'm kind of looking right as we talk here. Do we know who's going to start for Wyoming at quarterback? I know Tyler Vanderwall entered the transfer portal. Is he still the starting quarterback here? I mean, because that certainly is an interesting question in this one. I think that this is a Wyoming team where they were without Sean Chambers. I assume he's still out as well. So this is a team that, doesn't exactly have a great quarterback situation, but they're playing against a team in Georgia State who their quarterback's playing with the torn ACL. So Ellington has not even been close to the same. I know he hasn't been able to run the ball. for obvious reasons. And, you know, this Georgia State team doesn't play against defenses nearly as good as this Wyoming defense. Wyoming was the team that I wanted to go against for a long time in the season. They were very fortunate to win some of the games that they won. There's no doubt about that. But I will say, later in the season, Wyoming really started playing better football. They almost beat Boise State. You know, Craig Bohl can coach. Yeah, this is he's very good. And we talked about this at the beginning of bowl season, which honestly feels like it was a really long time ago. But Craig Bohl's been really good in bowl games. You know, this is a guy who was very good in the FCS level, and he's done well so far at the FBS level as well. I would think this team would be really ready to go. You know, like I said, I'm not exactly sure the quarterback situation at Wyoming. This is a game I haven't looked at too closely, but, you know, my lean would be Wyoming. They haven't had a good quarterback to start with. So I wouldn't think the drop off would be that significant regardless of who plays, but Wyoming's going to run the football. So the question is, can Georgia State stop the run? I don't think Georgia State's going to have very much success stopping the run here. They were giving up 5.32 yards per carry in the regular season. And, you know, they're playing against a Sun Belt schedule. So it's not like they've really proven that they could stop anybody before now. I would think Wyoming runs the ball early and often in this game. I don't think Georgia State can score very much here. You know, Wyoming -7 is my lean. I'll have to look at this game some more, but I couldn't bet Georgia State here.
No, I can't either, and I agree with you, and that's the interesting thing about Vanderwall, who I guess they're preparing him as the starter, but it could be true freshman Levi Williams, who gets the start. Only 13 pass attempts during the regular season. Did complete 8 of them, but also took a couple of sacks and got picked off. 28 carries for 128 on the ground. So maybe Wyoming just says, you know, and look, I mean, if you're Craig Bohl, I think you have to go with Levi Williams. Nothing against Tyler Vanderwall, but why would you start a guy in your bowl game who's not going to be with the program next year? I think you've got to go with the freshman and Williams here, which gives Georgia State something else to try and figure out, because there's virtually no film on this kid. So there's also that kind of factors into the equation. I think you've got to take Wyoming here -7 if you're going to take a side. I think the under makes some sense here too. There are a few things that you really can't simulate in your bowl practices. For Georgia State, they cannot simulate the physicality of Wyoming. They don't get it in Sun Belt play, and they're not going to get it in practice facing off with each other. I'm sure Sean Elliott has increased the toughness level of his team, but Wyoming, I mean, this is just a different type of animal, and they're a very different type of animal for the Mountain West, which is why they've been able to have a lot of success there in that conference, despite, you know, not lighting up the scoreboard like some of the teams in that conference do. So, like you, I think it's got to be Wyoming here if you're going to play anything. And again, I just think Wyoming, so physical. And I think that's something that could really help them in the second half, maybe live betting opportunity, maybe a second half play on the Cowboys there in that one. Speaking of the Cowboys, we'll go to the Lone Star State here for the Alamo Bowl, game 261-262, Texas and Utah. Pretty interesting matchup here. Texas team with Tom Herman in that preferred underdog role. Worked out for them last year against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Utah off the Pac-12 championship game disappointment. Does Kyle Whittingham get his team back on track for this one?
This is a fascinating game. This is one of my favorite games of the bowl season just because of everything that's going on in it. You know, I wanted to like Texas in this game, and I think I still would lean Texas if I had to take a side here. Obviously, Texas with the home field advantage here in this one means something too. This is a Utah team that, you know, they played in the Pac-12. You want to lay points with a Pac-12 team in essentially a road game and a bowl game? I don't want to. I mean, maybe somebody else does because Utah has been so good throughout the course of the season. I could understand that, certainly. And Texas defense has been so bad that you would think Utah could move the ball here pretty well. On the other side, Utah's defense has been very good. I will say that I think Texas's offense is better than what they have normally faced. So, you know, Texas may be able to move the ball a decent amount here as well. Utah plays at a really slow pace. They're actually 130th out of 130 teams in tempo this year, which is pretty interesting to me. I wouldn't have projected them to be the slowest team. I would have guessed it would be, you know, Wisconsin or Army or somebody like that. Both those teams were pretty close to being it, but Utah ended up as the very slowest team. Both of these teams were very good in turnover margin this year, +8 for Utah, +6 for Texas. You know, I was surprised when I was looking at special teams play in this game. Utah, according to S&P, 72nd, Texas 12th. Utah is a team that I would have thought of as having good special teams every year. Not as good this year, though. I think this is a Utah team that is the better team here, certainly. I think there's some question as to what happens as far as motivation here because, you know, they missed out on their chance to get to the semifinals. And now, you know, they have to go play a road game at Texas. Now, I will say Kyle Whittingham, you know, some people were down on him pretty quickly after that last game. I will say they certainly played poorly in the last time we saw them in the Pac-12 title game. But Whittingham is unquestionably a really good coach. You know, some people can jump off the train after one bad game. I'm not willing to do that and say that Whittingham is a poor coach by any means. Tom Herman in the underdog role. You're going to hear about the Tom Herman as an underdog stat many times here in the next day or two. I think, to be honest with you, I'll probably end up passing this game, but I do kind of lean Texas, and I wonder if we get 7.5 here. I think 7.5 was there for a little bit earlier. Then it came back to a juice 7. I got 53% of the bets on Utah, 53% of the money on Utah. So this one's a pretty split market. So far, the under getting a little bit of the money and the bets. So interesting to see what happens here. I'm going to lean Texas, but I'm a little bit shy to go against Whittingham in a bowl game as well.
Real quickly, about 25 minutes ago on Twitter, confirmed that Levi Williams will start the bowl game for Wyoming. That's straight from the mouth of head coach Craig Bohl. So just wanted to update that real quickly there. As far as this game goes, I kind of like the over here because I think Utah can move the football in Texas. Pretty much everybody else has moved the football in Texas. And Utah's offense, really, really strong this year. 11th in yards per play offensively. So they've done a very, very good job. And with the loss of Jalen Johnson and another defensive back there for Utah, Johnson sitting out, getting ready for the NFL draft where, you know, he's likely to be a first-round pick, maybe a very early second-round pick, Texas has got some guys at wide receiver. And Utah's defense is really, really good against the run. They've been very good against the pass, but they're going to get a lot of Sam Ellinger and Devin Duvernay in this game. And I'm not sure how they really stack up. And something else here, too, you know, I mentioned in that Arizona Bowl handicap that, you know, you try to figure out how Georgia State can try and simulate that physicality. Utah is a very, very physical team, as we know, but Texas is going to spread them out and throw the football. That takes a little bit of that physical element out of the equation. Ellinger's definitely mobile enough to avoid the rush if he needs to. I think both of these teams have a lot of positive yardage plays. I don't see very many negative plays generated by either one of these defenses. I like the over here in this one. I think this should be a pretty spirited type of game where both teams can get up and down the field a little bit. Again, the tempo worries me a little bit with regards to the total, but like I said, I just don't see a lot of negative plays. I don't see a lot of third and long situations. I think over 55, the way to look here for me.
Yeah, I can't disagree with the over in this one. I don't have a strong opinion there. That's basically exactly where I put the number. So to me, Utah, Texas, really fascinating from a side standpoint. I will say the one worry I'd have about the over, obviously the tempo, but then also Utah's defense could get a decent amount of sacks here. Texas has given up a lot of sacks this year. Utah, a good pass rush. You know, you could get them in the backfield a little bit there. I do think that Texas will be able to throw the ball on them. If you think, though, back, it wasn't it Fink that was at quarterback at USC for that game that USC beat them. And it wasn't JT Daniels, and I don't think it was Slovis either. So, you know, USC was able to move the ball really well in that one. I know USC has great wide receivers, but, you know, Fink didn't exactly set the world on fire when he came in against Iowa. So I think that does say that Utah's secondary could be a weakness. And like you said, some of them sitting out as well.
Matt Fink in that game, 21 of 30 for 351, three touchdowns and a pick. Slovis did complete both of his pass attempts, but Fink was the man there with 351 passing yards. So again, that would be probably the closest comp that we've got based on Utah's schedule. And, you know, obviously Oregon had some success moving the football on them too. One more game on Tuesday to talk about, the Belk Bowl, 12 o'clock kickoff, but the last game by rotation number 291, 292, Kentucky and Virginia Tech. The swan song for Bud Foster, the last game for him as the VaTech defensive coordinator. And he's had quite an assignment here trying to figure out Lynn Bowden Jr. and that Kentucky rushing attack.
Yeah, you know, I've heard some people who like Virginia Tech a good amount in this game. Listen to a couple other podcasts, trying to kind of just get thoughts on what people think on this one. I will say that some people just want to bet Virginia Tech here just because it's Foster's last game. I'm very cautious to do something like that. I think both teams want to win this game. I think that both teams would be fairly motivated for this game. Certainly not saying I don't think Virginia Tech cares. It's more that, you know, Kentucky plays in a much better conference. You're giving me 2.5 points. Bovada's at 3 with extra juice if you take the 3. I like Kentucky here. You know, I can't take Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is a very limited team on offense, and their defense certainly played better late in the season. I would lean to the under in this one as well. So I have two fairly strong leans in this one. I like Kentucky's a decent amount, and I also like the under a decent amount. You know, to me, this is a Kentucky team that really did pretty good this year. You know, this is a team that lost a lot of people from last season. I think Kentucky's a really well-coached team. You look, they went 9-3 ATS this year. I think Kentucky fans have to be pretty excited about their team in general because, you know, this was supposed to be the year where Kentucky really fell off and was terrible. And I know that they weren't nearly as good as they were last year, but they lost everybody. I mean, they really lost a lot of players. I think Kentucky played pretty well this year. And, you know, losing quite a few guys on offense due to injury throughout the course of the season, and yet they kind of reinvent themselves and they become this really good running attack. 6.36 yards per carry, really good offensive line play. I don't think Virginia Tech is going to consistently be able to stop them. Kentucky plays slowly, which would make me lean to the under. Virginia Tech has been running a lot more lately, too. Both of these teams very run heavy. I like the under some. I like Kentucky a good amount. I think Kentucky money line could be a good play here too. So even if it gets 3, you know, I would probably split the bet and bet some of it on Kentucky and then some of it on the money line.
This is a tough one for me. This is probably the game I like the least out of the Tuesday games because, you know, again, I mean, you've got a Virginia Tech run defense that did play very well here over the course of the season. And offensively, they were much better when Hendon Hooker took over. So you've got kind of a tale of two teams here with Virginia Tech a little bit. And to a degree, you've got the same thing with Kentucky because once Bowden Jr. took over and they got rid of the atrocious quarterback play that they had early on in the year, they were a much different team. And it also helped them defensively, too, to have that big rushing attack to kind of dominate time of possession in some of their games. I guess it's a hard game. And I think with extra prep time, you know, you've got two quarterbacks that can improvise really well. So I'm not sure how much that extra prep time actually helps. I'm not going to have a play on this game. I'm going to try and do what I can to at least watch the second half after I get some work done. But definitely a very fascinating game to be sure. And again, don't fall in love with the Bud Foster angle, as Kyle just mentioned. You know, we've fallen in love a lot of times with these motivation angles here in the bowl season. And for the most part, the teams that we thought weren't going to be all that motivated actually were extremely motivated and played very, very well. So if you guess wrong on motivation, it can be really difficult. And if you kind of guess wrong on some of these Bud Foster type things or the interim type things, stuff like that, you can wind up with a pretty bad losing ticket. So don't just fall in love with this game because of the Bud Foster angle. Really handicap it from both sides.
Yeah, I think that was the point I was trying to make as well, too. If you like Virginia Tech here, that's fair. I don't think that should be the reason you like Virginia Tech. You know, I think that certainly they want to win, but I don't think that just because Bud Foster's last game is this game that they're automatically going to win this game. I think that's a pretty simplified handicap and not the way you want to look at things in the long term. And I also will say, let's hope this Belk Bowl doesn't have the bad beat from like it had a few years ago. I still remember that game. I didn't bet that game, but that was one of the worst ever.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I know the Belk Bowl kind of known for its Twitter account and known for that bad beat. So I guess we'll see what happens with this year's version of the game. We move to Wednesday here. We start with game 263, 264, Michigan and Alabama in the Citrus Bowl. Alabama touchdown favorite with extra juice market wide. Of course, Bovada 7.5 dealing extra juice on the Alabama side. So Alabama very much the public side here in this game. Doesn't seem like sharp action has gotten too involved, except maybe taking a little bit of a look at the total going up from 57.5 to 58.5.
I agree with the sharp move to the over here. The over is certainly my favorite play in this game. I do have to say that, you know, everybody and their brother and mom and dad's betting Alabama in this game, 84% of the bets. That's the most the public or any of the tickets have been on any one team so far. So I'm curious to see if this evens out at all. I really don't think it's going to even out very much. I can't imagine too many people would really want to go against Alabama here. At the same time, Alabama doesn't have a huge reason to be really up for this game. And this is a good opportunity for Michigan. You know, this is a team that really wants to pick up a win against a big name opponent that could really help them for recruiting. It could help them a lot going into next season. I think Michigan has more to gain from this game by far than does Alabama. So I would be careful about laying the points here for that reason. I mean, you know, you can tell that the public likes Alabama. I think that that will continue to be the case. I like the over here, thinking that Michigan's offense has played better late in the season. Alabama's defense has really looked pretty bad in some of these games late in the year. Auburn made them look bad. Obviously, LSU made them look bad, but I don't really count that one against them. Alabama's defense is not what it was in previous seasons. Michigan's offense was a weakness early in the year. Later in the year, Shea Patterson started playing quite a bit better. The new offensive coordinator's scheme ended up working out better. You know, Michigan is better on offense than they were in past seasons, and I think that Michigan can move the ball here. I don't know that Michigan can stop Alabama very well, even without Tua playing, obviously. You know, I think Alabama has so many skill position players that are just so fast. They have a big speed advantage here against this Michigan defense. I'd be surprised if Michigan can stop them very consistently. So I like the over a pretty good amount here.
Yeah, I think I like Alabama team total over here. I'm not sure what Michigan does. I know Alabama's got a couple of key players that are sitting this game out to prepare for the NFL. And you know, they lost some guys before the season and throughout the season too, particularly in the back seven that could really have an impact here. The thing that worries me is I don't really love Michigan's offensive line play. And Shea Patterson throws off his back foot a lot. He's got very happy feet in the pocket, doesn't step up confidently. You know, he's got some very good wide receivers that he just hasn't maximized over the course of the season. If he does that here in this game, not only can Michigan keep it close, but this one should fly over the total. If he can't, then they're going to get some third and longs. Alabama may force some turnovers here. This thing could get out of hand. So the fact that all of Alabama's offensive personnel has decided to play this game, I don't know how Michigan stops them. So I'd have to go Alabama, if nothing, from a side standpoint. I don't think that I'm going to play the game, though, because like you said, I don't know how invested Alabama is. First time not in the college football playoff, and they don't have anything to gain from this game. They just don't. Michigan, as you mentioned, everything to gain, a lot for Michigan to lose, too, because if they get blown out by an Alabama team that people don't think is motivated, that's another bad look for Harbaugh and company. Even though they're badly out-talented across the field, it's still another bad look for them to get blown out with Alabama probably not fully invested in this one. But Mac Jones should be invested, and we'll see if the younger Tagovailoa gets a chance to play as well. You know, that could be a factor here in this one too. I think Alabama team total is the way that I'm going to look here, because even if they're not sufficiently motivated on defense, their offensive guys, I mean, they're just all burners, man. And they're out there trying to improve their draft stock. I don't think Michigan stops them much in this game.
I think that's a good point, too. I certainly don't have anything against Alabama team total over. I like both the game over and Alabama team total over. I think this game could be quite a bit higher scoring than some people think. So this is one of my favorites that we've talked about so far.
All right, so let's go to the Outback Bowl, mate. We'll go to game 265-266, Minnesota and Auburn. This one down from 8 to 7, pretty much market-wide. And in fact, a lot of the sevens out there juiced a little bit on the plus side with Minnesota. Total also up in this game, 51.5 to as high as 54 out there in the marketplace now. What are you thinking about this one?
Well, I have to see. I haven't looked close enough at this one to see how many people are sitting out for Auburn. I know there was some talk that some guys would sit out. I'm not sure if that's come to fruition yet or not. I do think that Auburn is the much better team here. You know, if Auburn doesn't have a bunch of guys sitting out at a -7 at -105, I certainly lean to Auburn in this game. You know, 67% of the bets are on Auburn and the line has dropped. So clearly somebody influential likes Minnesota here in this one. I can't take Minnesota. You know, Minnesota has played a far weaker schedule than has Auburn. Minnesota's played a schedule that's, 40-something in the schedule strength. Auburn's top five. You know, this is a Minnesota team that plays in the Big Ten West, and I think Minnesota's defense looks far better on paper than what they are actually on the field. You know, if you look at the Big Ten West in general, there are some really, really bad offenses there. You know, I love that stat from the other day about Northwestern. Northwestern had 6 touchdown passes all year. Joe Burrow had 7 in the first half against Oklahoma. So, I mean, that was one of my favorite stats. Sorry, I had to throw in one more bash of Northwestern's offense, and certainly nothing personal. I like Pat Fitzgerald and that program, but they were just so bad offensively this year, and really the Big Ten West in general. You know, I think Minnesota is going to throw the ball around a little bit more than they normally have. If you look at their scheme throughout the season, they do run the ball pretty heavy, but I can't imagine that they really want to run it against this Auburn defensive front too much. Minnesota has not been used to playing against defensive lines this good throughout the course of the season. I think Minnesota is going to throw the ball more. They have some pretty good playmakers at wide receiver. I think they're a bit underrated on the outside. As far as QBR for the season, Minnesota's 6th in the country. So they've been very good. Minnesota's been getting some big plays through the air. I think they can actually get some big gainers against Auburn's secondary. I don't think that Minnesota can stop Auburn offensively. I know Auburn hasn't been really consistent on offense this year, but Auburn has played against some really good defenses. And like I said, even though Minnesota is 30th in yards per play allowed so far this year, I really don't think that Minnesota defense is this good. So my two leans in this game are Auburn minus the points and the over.
Something I'm kind of interested in seeing for Minnesota here, Kirk Ciaraca takes the offensive coordinator job at Penn State. So he won't be there for the bowl game. Did a lot of good things for this Minnesota offense. But if there's one thing that we know about PJ Fleck, it's that he's a master motivator. So I think he can get through to this offense. I don't think that this offense is going to sleepwalk through this bowl game just because the OC and quarterback's coach is gone. I think that he's going to tell these boys, look, we're going to go out there and have fun. And if you're going to have fun and be aggressive, it's going to show up on the offensive side. So I think this offense does still do a lot of work. And again, I mean, this is a Minnesota offense. Again, you think about some of the elite offenses we have in college football. Minnesota, 1,000-yard rusher and 2 1,100-yard wide receivers. You don't think about Minnesota Golden Gophers football being that prolific on offense. So I agree with everything you said. I think I do like Auburn, depending on their motivation level here. I think we do get some points in this game. And it should be really interesting to see how Minnesota stacks up taking on one of the more elite top-level conference teams out there in college football. Let's go to the Rose Bowl, 267-268, Wisconsin and Oregon. Wisconsin, field goal favorite market-wide. Total up on this game as well from 49.5 to as high as 51.5 in the marketplace. What do you think here about this one with Wisconsin, now that full field goal favorite?
Well, I think that it's clear that there's some sharp money here on Wisconsin. 55% of the bets are on Oregon here, but 62% of the money's on Wisconsin. So certainly interesting for people who like to follow that type of thing. I've always said that I think it's interesting to follow that. I don't think that that's a sole reason you should make any bet. You know, I think that you need to go a little deeper than that. It's nice to know, but it's not something that you just want to bet the game just on that alone. I think that, Oregon is a team that everybody just saw play very well in their last game. But Oregon has been fairly inconsistent over the last couple of years. Mario Cristobal, I mean, he looked great in last game, but I'm still not convinced that he's a tremendous coach. Paul Christ, a good coach, certainly. You know, Wisconsin, the problem with them is Jack Cohn is just not really very good. You know, this is a Wisconsin team that has to be able to run the football. The question here is, do you think Wisconsin can run the ball on Oregon? Because, you know, if Wisconsin can't run the ball, they're not going to win this game. You know, Wisconsin is not good enough in the passing attack to be able to win this game. I do think that Wisconsin can run on Oregon. Oregon's 13th at defending the run, 3.23 yards per carry. They have not faced running attacks like Wisconsin. And, you know, to me, this is a Wisconsin team that is probably, you know, more consistent. We know what we're going to get out of them more. So I could understand taking Wisconsin here. I do think there's some chance that Oregon shows up and just looks terrific like they did against Utah. I don't think I like this game very much from a side standpoint. I'd have to lean the under with the number getting bet up. I know there's some sharp money on the over, clearly. If this gets to 52, I'll probably take the under. Otherwise, I might sit this one out. But an interesting game, to be sure. This is a game that I'm more excited about as a fan than as a bettor.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I have some power ratings overlay on Oregon. I have Oregon a favorite here in this game. And I don't really know if I want to go against that sharp move. Now, of course, this could be just a fade of the Pac-12, which, you know, as we've talked about already, is something that has been pretty profitable overall over the last few bowl seasons. Wisconsin is a good team. And I think Cohen, again, like you said, they have to be able to run the football because Cohen is an effective enough passer in the play action game. You know, he'll complete some things to get you third and short, stuff like that. If Oregon can take that away, they can have a lot more success in this game. Something that's not being talked about really at all, Justin Herbert. I mean, is this not a spot for Justin Herbert to really kind of recoup some of that lost NFL draft value? I mean, there's all the incentive in the world for him to go out here and play really, really well. I don't know if he does it necessarily, but you know, that's something that no one's really talking about with this game. It's kind of all about, you know, the points that you discussed. Can Wisconsin run the football? Can Cohen complete enough passes? What about Cristobal versus Paul Chryst, who's a pretty underrated coach himself? But what about Justin Herbert, man? I mean, at some point, this guy's going to go out there and have a game, and this would be a pretty damn good time for it.
Yeah, it would. I will say that I think Herbert was a little bit disappointing. I know that at some point he was being talked about as a possible first pick in the NFL draft, so he certainly dropped a good amount. Wisconsin's defense really is aggressive, and that's something that I should have pointed out the first time. Wisconsin, 49 sacks this year, and Oregon has 41, so you get two teams that are really blitzing heavily. Wisconsin can get a lot of pressure just with their line, too. Oregon's offensive line has been very good in run blocking, has given up 23 sacks, which I think is a little bit disappointing given that Oregon's offensive line was thought to be extremely good. So I think they are a good offensive line, maybe not quite as good as some people thought. Oregon's done a good job not turning it over this year. Oregon has really been helped a lot by the fact that they have a plus 13 turnover margin, where Wisconsin has a plus 3 turnover margin. I'm going to lean to Wisconsin here in this game. I'm not sure I'm going to make any bet in this game.
Well, this is one of those games. I mean, there's some substantial fumble luck in play in this game. Wisconsin, 14 fumbles, tied for the second most in the country. They fumbled 23 times, so they lost 14 of their 23 fumbles. Oregon did a pretty good job recovering fumbles. There's a big difference in that department here in this game. So, you know, it's one of those things where, I'm looking, 4 of 13 fumbles recovered for Oregon. So Oregon actually didn't have much fumble luck recovering them. Wisconsin didn't have any fumble luck holding on to the football. So we'll see if that factors into play here. And if I remember correctly, Wisconsin fumbled in the red zone quite a bit over the course of the season too. So maybe that's something that kind of evens out here a little bit. Maybe one of the reasons why we're kind of looking at an over situation here in this game too. One more bowl game to tackle. It's the Sugar Bowl, 269-270, Baylor and Georgia. A lot of Baylor money here in this one. We got as low as 4.5 on this side. Now we're back up to 5, 5.5 market wide, but this thing opened 8 with Baylor getting a lot of points in New Orleans and a very low total of 42.5. Total's gone down. Line has gone down for this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game that I'll keep my thoughts pretty quick. I will say I like Baylor plus 8. I don't like Baylor plus 5. You know, this is a spot where the line move is pretty drastic. You know, I know it's a low total, but now you're below the key number of 7. Like you said, you even got to 4.5 there a little bit. You know, Georgia is probably not very excited to be in this game, and everybody knows that, and that's why it is what it is at this point. Georgia certainly has far superior talent. Who has the better coach here? I like Matt Rhule. I think Rhule has a coaching advantage over Kirby Smart. I don't think Smart's a terrible coach by any means, but Matt Rhule's a very good coach. Given this long, he's a good coach as an underdog, certainly. To me, this is one where Baylor at a bigger price would have interested me at least some. But at this price, I mean, I don't see how you can consider it a value to take Baylor plus 5. I would lean the under, but I don't like to take under 41.5. So this is a game I'm almost certainly not going to bet.
Yeah, I'm not going to play this one either. I mean, I think that Georgia being down three offensive linemen may be a little bit overblown here because, again, I mean, they just have the higher talent level. And what Matt Rhule has done with the talent in Waco has been absolutely phenomenal. But keep in mind, I mean, this is a team that lost a good amount of athleticism with all the fallout from the Briles thing. Then they had some sanctions and they had some limits on scholarships and stuff like that. This is a team that you give them all the credit in the world. You give Matt Rhule all the credit in the world for building this program back up. But at the same time, they don't have Georgia's talent. And yes, they played well against Oklahoma twice, but they also blew a big lead and then weren't able to get it done in the Big 12 championship game. Georgia's talent level is it's something that stands out to me here in this game to where I didn't even take Baylor plus the 8. I didn't take them plus 7, plus 7.5. Sure as hell not going to take them at 5. The only thing I could do here, if I'm in a bowl pool or something like that, at this price point, is Georgia. I don't know if Georgia wins and covers, but the no-show from Georgia in the Sugar Bowl last year, in a different circumstance, off that heartbreaking loss to Alabama, they've got to show up for this Sugar Bowl, right?
You would think that would motivate them for this year. I mean, I'm hesitant to take this game in any way, but I agree with you. There's just no way you can take Baylor plus 5. I thought about taking Baylor plus 8 and taking it early on. I ended up not doing it. So at this point, you know, this is just a game that I'll just cross out. And I can't say that I'm too excited to watch this one either. I mean, you know, I think that Baylor's a good team. I think Matt Rhule's a tremendous coach. The question is Matt Rhule going to stay at Baylor? And that's obviously a question for a different day. But a decent game, but not one that I'm going to get involved in betting-wise.
Well, like I said, next week with fewer college football games to talk about, we'll kind of recap the bowl season, sort of talk about the concept of that bowl bounce, and take a look at the national championship game as well between Clemson and LSU. Before we transition over to college basketball side of things, I just want to give you a chance because I know you've given out a lot of good free bowl information over at bettersportspicks.com to talk about that a little bit with our listeners here.
Yeah, you can go over to bettersportspicks.com right now. It's totally free. Everybody can see it. You know, later on, it's going to be free for members, and it's a free membership. So you just register, and you're going to be able to see the information for free. There's a members area there, free members area, where you can just – you're going to be able to see my leans. I'm going to put some things in there like teasers. I've done very well on teasers in the NFL. Been able to give those out to some newsletter subscribers in the past. I'll put some more of the teasers in this free area. Something I've been doing here lately is I've been giving out a lot of bowl information, looking at, you know, what the public actually likes on a certain day. I know a lot of people do want to know, you know, what's the fade the public play for this day. I'll be getting some of that information out more here over the rest of the bowl season. And then also just breaking the game down, you know, which offense has the advantage, which defense has the advantage, things like that. So head over to bettersportspicks.com and check out the free members area.
All right, so we'll spend a few minutes wrapping up the show here on college basketball. And again, a lot of college football ground to cover. So we'll do more college basketball next week and, of course, as we go forward. But for right now, the big story in the college basketball handicapping market is that conference play is here. And conference play started for a lot of conferences earlier on in the season, but now they're going to get back to it. They're going to get more involved with it. For other conferences, they're just starting conference play. They're going to be doing that now throughout the rest of the regular season and all the way through the conference tournaments as well. So, Kyle, I think first and foremost, what we absolutely need to talk about here today, how do you handicap conference play differently from the non-conference that we're used to seeing?
Well, first of all, the under is usually done pretty well early on in conference action. So I think that while the over has done better lately because the number has just been adjusted so far down, I think that you'll find some people wanting to bet some unders as conference action starts. These teams know each other better. Things usually tighten up a little bit. You also usually see a little bit less fouls. There's certainly still going to be some games that are ref shows, but you know that's going to be a little bit less frequent than what it was before. I think the other thing that I would point out that I think is a good angle to look at in conference action is everybody really cares at the beginning of conference play. You know, in college basketball, one of the strongest angles you can take when you're looking at sides is go with a team that has a really poor ATS record against a team with a really good ATS record in conference action. And I think now is a good time to talk about something like that because People are very quick to look at what they've just seen and say, you know, I'm done with this team. You know, I've seen this team have two really poor performances. You know, they went out to Maui. They looked terrible. They went out to, you know, the Diamond Head Invitational or whatever that one was called. I think that was it, in Hawaii here over Christmas. They looked really bad. So I'm going to just fade this team. Well, I don't think that's the way you should look at it. You know, these teams are going to be fully invested now in this conference action. There were questionable scheduling spots, and Adam, you know this, there were some really questionable scheduling spots for a lot of teams here in the last couple weeks. As we get out of the, as we get past New Year, there's going to be a lot more regular games. You know, teams will play on Wednesday and Saturday or Thursday and Saturday, things like that. Almost every week, you're going to play teams that you've been used to playing, go places that you've always been to. Familiarity, to me, it's a good thing for the underdog, especially a team that everybody's just done with. You know, you think that there's no chance for this team anymore. In cases like that, I really do think that taking the points and looking for the underdog can make a lot of sense early in conference action. So look for the teams that have a bad ATS record against the teams with a good ATS record. I also think it's really important to point out that, you know, by conference, there are better scheduling spots and tougher scheduling spots. You know, we'll talk about it a lot this year, but Conference USA is going to have a lot of bad scheduling spots. They just put together a very strange schedule. Pac-12 always has some interesting ones. You have other conferences where everybody's real tight together, like the MAC, you know, something like that, where it's harder to find tough scheduling spots to try to fade a team. But some of the other ones where everything's spread out, you know, this is something we've talked about in previous years, but I think it's important enough that we should mention it again that, you know, by conference, there's going to be a reason that we talk about some of these conferences more than others. So, you know, early in conference action, I would try to look and see, you know, which of these teams have been traveling a long ways away. Maybe they might be a little bit rusty in that first game back when they've had a long break. Fade them in the first half. I mean, maybe look to back them in the second half. But in general, I think this is a good time to talk about, you know, certain conferences are going to have better spots to look for. Other conferences, you just decide whether you think that team, you know, is better than the other team or not. There's going to be less of a scheduling edge. But in general, I'd look to the under if I had to just blindly bet the games. And I would also look to bet the underdog.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. And you mentioned to me before the show, a team like Oregon, for example, played a very good non-conference schedule. This week in conference play, they play Colorado and Utah, that dreaded altitude double in the Pac-12. Very, very hard to sweep that. And in the Pac-12, you've got travel partners, same thing in Conference USA. You know, Conference USA, you may play one game in Myrtle Beach in Conway against Coastal, then you play Appalachian State. App State's at elevation. That's a tough road trip for you. In Conference USA, you go west. You play UTSA and UTEP. If UTEP is the second game, El Paso's in elevation. So there are some little scheduling spots there where you might play Thursday, Saturday, Thursday in San Antonio, Saturday in El Paso. That El Paso game, maybe at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, very quick turnaround for you to go and play in elevation. So there are inside conference spots like that. Still early in the conference portion of the season, a lot of students still on break. So some home court advantages may not be as strong now as they will be in 2 or 3 weeks. And one other thing to take a look at here, and I know this is something that we kind of drove home last week when we talked about some fade and follow teams, and we'll do the same thing here again. Some of these conference opponents have played very good schedules against teams that haven't. You know, for example, I was looking at Duquesne this week. They play St. Louis and Davidson, two teams that have played much better conference schedules. Duquesne's played absolutely nobody, and those games are at home. So that's a really challenging thing for a team like Duquesne. So strength of schedule mismatches, very important early in conference play as well.
Yeah, I like that you brought that one up. And I think Duquesne's a perfect example. A team that just pads their stats early in the season, looks like they're really good. I'm disappointed I didn't fade them in their last couple games. I should have known in these last couple games, at least one of those games to go against them. I mean, what a terrible performance by them against Marshall. So hopefully we haven't lost value too much from fading Duquesne, but they've certainly not looked good in their last couple games. I do want to go back to the Oregon one real quick. Oregon's also 10-3 ATS so far this year. So I'm not sure which game I want to go against Oregon this week, whether it's the Colorado game or the Utah game, but I would be surprised if Oregon's covers the spread in both of those games. So if Oregon does cover on Thursday, I'd be more likely to go against them there. On Saturday, a quick turnaround too at Utah. So I think you could see a pretty tough spot for Oregon, and Colorado's a pretty good team. So I'll be curious to see what that line comes out at. I assume Colorado will be a small favorite in that game, but that should be a really good game. Yeah, I think the strength of schedule thing is a really important one as well, because who has been testing themselves and who hasn't? You know, we're going to find out those teams that, you know, are 10-2 or something like that, but they have played absolutely no one. They're going to put quite a few losses on the board here coming up soon. And the marketplace in general is likely a little bit too high on them. So I'd look for teams that have a schedule, strength of schedule that has been really poor, especially those teams who have really good ATS record that have had poor schedules, and try to go against them.
All right, so we got one key injury here, a fade team, and two follow teams to finish a very shortened version of handicapping the hardwood here. And again, we'll have plenty of time to talk college basketball beginning next week, and as you know, the football season kind of fades away here. But a big injury in the Missouri Valley Conference that we're going to start with here today.
Yeah, Elijah Childs for Bradley. I think he's their most important player. He really came on last year. I think he's the reason that they really put together a nice run late last year. Very versatile player. Until he's back, I think there's going to be money coming against them every single game. They lost that first game, played really poorly. Money came against them with Toledo as well. Toledo lost that game. Bradley with a nice bounce back. I think Bradley's a team that I'd be cautious to back, and also be careful about these opening lines, because some of these odds makers and certain books more than others, and I don't want to call out certain ones, but you know, some of these books are just copying what KenPom has. So if KenPom has a certain number on Bradley, that's not going to be where this number is going to close, because people who know that Elijah Childs are injured are going to want to go against Bradley. So I'd be really careful about that. If you want to bet Bradley, you want to wait till that line move comes in. If you want to go against them, you better bet it pretty quick.
So I love this fade team, because it sort of encompasses everything that we've already talked about here. A team with a good ATS record, a team that hasn't played anybody, and a team that's in a pretty good conference. That's the LaSalle Explorers.
Yeah, LaSalle, I mean, they're 9-3 this year. They're 10-2 ATS. The market's got to catch up with them here. I think LaSalle, I like that they're playing good defense so far this year. I think they're certainly much better on defense than they are on offense. And this is a team that will likely struggle to score in the A-10. Because if you look at their strength of schedule, it's 260th. And the defenses that they faced are the 318th strongest slate of defenses, according to KenPom. So you're taking a team that really has been really bad on offense so far this year already, and they're going to play some pretty good defenses here in the A-10. I don't think LaSalle is going to be able to keep covering numbers like they have been. They've played some really weak teams in the last couple weeks, especially. You know, this is a LaSalle team to me that is middle of the road team at best. So I think that going against them coming up here soon could make a lot of sense. Dayton has some injuries, so I would check the injury board for Dayton before I load them up against LaSalle there. Obviously, Dayton will be a favorite in that game, but some of these other games LaSalle's going to play coming up, where they're going to be going on the road against a team like UMass, maybe even Fordham. I mean, Fordham is just a really weak team, but I think down the road, longer term, then they play Rhode Island on the road, at Richmond, even George Mason at home. These are games that I think there could be value going against LaSalle, because I think LaSalle, you know, when you get to 10-2 ATS and you're in a fairly big name conference, obviously this is not, you know, a Power 5 conference, but you've got the Atlantic 10 is going to get plenty of publicity. There's some pretty good teams in this conference. So LaSalle is going to be facing good competition down the road. Dayton's a really good team. VCU and Davidson are solid. Richmond, St. Louis, pretty good too. I think fading LaSalle will make you some money.
I think so too. When you look at the three true road games that LaSalle has played, Penn, Villanova, and Drexel, those are all teams located in Philadelphia. So this is, it's not like they've gone anywhere for true road games. They did play some neutral site games in a tournament, but now that they're in conference play going to play true road games, they're actually leaving the state. And if you've already got a bad offensive team, and you're going to an unfamiliar shooting venue, going on long travel, something like that, LaSalle definitely looks like a premium fade candidate here over the next little while. A couple of follow-up teams to finish up the Handicapping the Hardwood segment this week. Both of them from the WAC. What are you looking at here?
Yeah, I didn't do that on purpose, but they're certainly under the radar. The WAC is about as under the radar as you can get. Grand Canyon, I'll start with, they're 4-10 ATS so far this year. This team should be better than they are. And I think they have a good enough coach and enough talent on their team that the market is probably going to be pretty low on them. Weak conference, they've played a tougher schedule than most teams in the WAC. I think Grand Canyon could be a pretty good follow here coming up. And I do like the second follow better than this one. But I think Grand Canyon is one where if the number is low enough on them, you know, they're going to be playing some bad teams coming up. So I would look to back them.
Yeah, as we look at LaSalle here real quickly, that neutral site tournament was in Florida. So they've literally only played games in Pennsylvania and Florida so far this year. And it's almost January. Their first road game in conference play Sunday at Fordham, as you mentioned, then Wednesday at UMass. Maybe a couple of good spots to fade LaSalle there. Good call on Grand Canyon, especially because, as you said, playing that tougher schedule, did have some losses from last year, but that's a team that does recruit at a pretty good level, especially for a WAC school, and also very, very good home court advantage once everybody gets back on campus there. On the stronger fall, you mentioned here, New Mexico State. What do you like about this team?
I like this one a lot. I think New Mexico State is far better than their ATS record here. I'm hoping that everybody else, you know, the odds makers, the market in general, does not realize that AJ Harris is back, and that's going to make a huge difference for this New Mexico State team. You know, AJ Harris is the guy that makes this offense run. I'm a big buyer of this team. Chris Jans has proven himself as a very good coach. They have easily the best talent in the WAC. I don't think it's even close. You know, them being 5-9-1 ATS makes them a really good back. I wish they hadn't just beat Mississippi State. You know, they beat them 58-52. So it took just a little bit of the value away. And they have a good game here coming up against Cal Baptist, a team that actually beat them at home last year. So we'll see how they play in that one. I do think that the WAC at the bottom is so weak that you're going to have them just absolutely blasting teams like Chicago State and UT Rio Grande Valley, Seattle, teams like that. You know, there's a couple decent teams there at the top, but the WAC is such a really weak league. I think New Mexico State's going to be laying some pretty decent numbers, but I think they're going to cover quite a few of those numbers.
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, I've got the free pick newsletter on a nice run on those free pick newsletters. I believe it's 91-59. Had a teaser yesterday on the Chiefs and the Ravens, so that one did cash in. Sign up for that free picks newsletter if you haven't already, and also check out the stuff over at bettersportspicks.com in the free area as well. I won't really do much of a sales pitch here today. Just look for that free information, and then also Happy New Year to everybody, and I appreciate all the listeners. I know that, you know, I have quite a few people reach out to me who listen here on Bang the Book Radio, some really solid people and guys who are very appreciative of the information that we've shared on these segments. So just wanted to say thank you to everybody and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well, brother. Big things hopefully coming our way in 2020. Kyle Hunter, again, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and bettersportspicks.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much, man. And we'll talk to you again next year.
Thanks, man. Take care.
There you go. Once again, there's professional handicapper Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of the show, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll do all four NFL playoff games. We'll do some NHL, maybe work in some college football just to try and get some more opinions on that here for this week. No show Wednesday, Brad Powers Thursday, Brent on Friday. We'll see what else we can come up with here for this week on the program. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.